Dr. Anna Mihaicha, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Maria, for having me.
It's truly an honor. I'll tell you what, this conversation is so crucial. So many people have got questions about the nanotechnology. We know that teams all across the world, La Quinta Columna, many others, Dr. Jane Ruby on the Stu Peters Network has been looking into to some of these findings as well as the Stu Peters Network. I've been looking into it. I know you've been working closely with Dr. David Nixon. For anyone who hasn't seen my latest report with Dr. David Nixon, please go to zmedia.com, go to the interview pages. This nanotechnology is literally looking like it's growing robotic arms, and it's just amazing. So I'm really looking forward to speaking with you. I'd like you to give the audience a little bit of background on you and your experience. And for the rest of this interview, we're going to affectionately refer to you as Dr. Anna, because maybe some people won't be able to pronounce Mihaicha properly. But Dr. Anna, you said that you're fine with being called that. So please do take us through a little bit of your history and how you started looking into these things.
Absolutely. So I'm a board certified internal medicine physician. I have a PhD in pathology. And at the beginning of this pandemic, obviously, I was very concerned about medical freedoms. And I started helping people with COVID treatments. And then I became a part of different groups that were looking, fighting for ethical freedom, medical freedom. But then really this situation in regards to studying what is the background of this entire pandemic, the transhumanist movement, the fact that we were told that people were going to be transformed into cyborgs, that that part of Yuval Harari's, who is Klaus Schwab's very close ally, that he was saying that, you know, the soul and the spirit of human beings will be a thing of the past. So I wanted to really understand more about the broader picture. I myself have written a book called Light Medicine, and I have very much in my research dived into biophysics, quantum physics, how does the brain work? How does our divine spiritual self actually interact with the body? This would be, you know, when people are leaving the body upon death and really hooking into this body while they're alive. There's a lot to it from a different perspective than allopathic medicine is understanding.
I'm so grateful that you bring that up, and I don't mean to cut you off, but just earlier this week we spoke to Karen Kingston, former Pfizer employee. She's a biotech analyst. She's been looking into the quantum dots, the quantum physics side of this. And I think it's an area that a lot of us don't understand. It's certainly an area that most mainstream doctors won't even touch. So I'm so glad that you're going to be speaking to us about this today. But where would you like to start, Dr. Anna?
Anywhere we can start about, you know, how does the brain actually work and what is known about it? Because you mentioned Karen Kingston and the quantum dot. So how does consciousness actually gets computed in the brain? Well, it turns out that microtubules in our neurons, they're about as small as nano size. And that is where the information of consciousness is being processed. And it turns out that they have been able, through nanocarbon tubes, to mimic microtubules, because carbon nanotubes are exactly the size of microtubules. And you can create processes with these carbon nanotubes when combined with hydrogel that mimic the human brain. In fact, artificial brains have been created from what's called time crystals. So this is a term from quantum computing. And what that is, it's a self-programmable material that has a perpetual motion quality, meaning it doesn't need energy from the outside. It doesn't have any type of chemical reactions, but it has access to all time simultaneous quantum states. And in that, it can compute infinite amount of information, just like the miraculousness of our brain. So it turns out that they, in the Brain Project research, they measured the resonant frequencies of the entire brain and mapped it. And then they created a hydrogel with these carbon nanotubes and time crystals involved that is able to process information similarly to our human brain. And this technology, part of it was also in Black Project, but part of it has been published. And so it's very important to understand that this technology is very far advanced of what common people or common doctors are understanding. But when we are seeing this nanotechnology that is injected, and I look at it in the context of the information that is being given to us by people like Yuval Harari, who say that sensing and surveillance will be under the skin, and that with this technological revolution of the Great Reset, that human brains will be able to be surveilled, and that your thoughts will be able to be surveilled and connected to others as well as connected to the quantum cloud. So how would they do that? What kind of a software platform would they do to hack humans, which they said that they with that this is now their goal, and they called humans hackable.
Hackable
So
animals, in fact, Yuval
hackable,
says.
yes, hackable animals. And so what appears to me to have happened is that this very advanced technology was injected into people via these technological weapons that are called the C19 injectables. They're not vaccines. It has been clearly shown that the manufacturing fraud that's happened is so horrendous that nothing is within the specification that should be in these vials. So we find contaminations, they call it contaminations, but if it is in most of the vials, then I don't think that that's a contamination. It's clearly an intentional act of metals. So what do metals do? Like aluminum, gadolinium, cesium, titanium. Metals have optical and electrical properties that can modulate the frequencies in the body. They have toxicity of their own. If they are nanosize, they are much more toxic than microsize. So first off, these are
So
toxic
you're
in.
saying it's more toxic if it's nano size?
That's right.
How?
So aluminum that is nanosize has a greater impact on toxicity than microsize. Part of it is because the nanosize is able to penetrate all cell membranes and all biological processes
Right.
and initiate that toxicity. But the other thing is that these metals have been used in combination with hydrogels, because there's many different hydrogels that can create these resonant frequencies and build what's called brain jelly. And so they can be part of this manufacturing process. So we have seen in live blood analysis, as well as in the analysis of these shots, many different forms and ribbons that appear to be graphene. And so these carbon-based structures, which could be graphene hydroxide, graphene oxide, other carbon-based structures, it's very challenging for us to evaluate this because it takes sophisticated equipment. The fact is that graphene oxide is a monoatomic layer. If you find carbon in a vial, you cannot say that there is no graphene oxide, because you cannot look down on a nanosize monoatomic layer. So recently, for example, there was some information coming out that what we're seeing are just cholesterol, salt, and sugar crystals, and that there's no graphene oxide. Well, first of all, these scientists didn't do the diligent research that, for example, Dr. David Nixon did to look at what is affecting the growth of these structures over a period of time. This was a long project over months. And then the other thing is, again, that the assembly of these carbon structures clearly depends on certain factors like temperature, like the overall environment, and maybe also how these chemicals are interacting with the human blood. So I think that this technology is, we have to again look at it under the umbrella from the premises that they want to hack humans as animals and they want to control their minds. And how do you control someone's mind? Well, you have to modulate the brain function. So you can do this by modulating frequency. Frequencies in the synaptic cleft, for example, is what our thoughts are made of. And so these kind of technologies that are very, very advanced require to be looked at from many different viewpoints, from quantum mechanics, from a perspective of material sciences, of chemistry, of very advanced engineering. I personally think that we should ask our government to declassify the information on things like super soldiers, for example, because it sure looks like some of this stuff that's all about, brain neural interface that Dr. Giordani from Georgetown University also discussed.
My goodness, that is loaded information, Dr. Anna. I mean, I don't even know where to start to question it. So I guess what I want to understand is how you said that there's a replication of the way that our brain works, that they've achieved this through these nanotubes. Forgive me if I'm misquoting you. This is quite new to me. So how have they actually done that? What is the mechanism behind that?
Okay, imagine that all things in nature vibrate. They have a resonant frequency. That resonant frequency can be measured. So in the brain, you can insert microelectrodes in many different regions of the brain and measure what is that frequency of that area of the brain and what function it performs. They've done that over 80 years and then have looked at the mathematical way that this programming happens. So for example, if we have a thought and that resonant frequency is captured, now we have programmable materials like this hydrogel. And you can apply a frequency and you can program it with information. And then this material is actually alive. It can listen and it can grow and self-learn and self-adapt.
It's
This is
AI. You're talking about AI.
absolutely. So this is quantum artificial intelligence, and it is creating an artificial human brain, and it's creating consciousness artificially. They have been able to create and manufacture something that has conscious awareness.
So let me ask you something there. The fact that there's an artificial consciousness inside the human brain now that's replicated the existing brain, does that then hijack the brain?
Well, that's certainly a grave concern. So how would you be able, if you were a criminal like these satanic elitists who want to hack the humans and say that the soul and the spirit is a thing of the past? So how would you do that? You would have to create a technology that is able to modulate your thoughts and your brain activity without you knowing that it is doing so. So how is that possible? Well, you can mind control somebody by applying brain frequencies, and they're inserting a information into your brain.
See, this
Or
is really interesting because when people talk about mind control, they think about experiments of the past where, through propaganda or through, well, essentially propaganda, what you see on TV or predictive programming through movies, this is what people equate mind control to. But we're actually talking about controlling someone's thoughts, controlling their emotions. We know that Karen Kingston recently spoke to us from RAND.org. It talks about being able to coerce people to do things that they wouldn't normally do. So this is actually, this technology is able to, as Yuval says, hack the human brain, hackable animals. They can actually overtake your own free will, your own soul, your own body.
Yes, certainly the literature and the research says so, because if this is a technology that is actually looking at subatomic particles and their spin state. So all subatomic particles spin. If you change the spin state, you change the information of that particle. You've just thought, changed someone's thought. How do you change the spin state? Through frequency, resonant frequency. And so if you have a semiconductor, an antenna, being put into your brain on a nanoscale that's growing to a microscopic scale, and this can now communicate with either a 5G frequency, for example, that is bombarding you or your cell phone with a certain frequency, then it can do stuff in your body. And it can do stuff in your brain. And so this is a technology that's certainly available. And that what we must ask is we have to get answers to these questions. First of all, what are these chips that we're seeing that are unfolding and enfolding into the quantum field? And so this technology, for example, carbon tubes and their crystallizations have a quantum cloaking ability, you know, so they are able to literally disappear into the quantum field of information. So is that what we are seeing here?
What do you mean about cloaking ability? What do you mean by that?
So a time crystal, which is, for example, a carbon nanotube in a hydrogel, has the ability to dissolve into the quantum field so that's no longer visible. So remember when David showed the images where the crystal was deconstructing according to some signal, whether or not, we don't know if it was sunlight or it was, you know, maybe getting away from the Wi-Fi router. So it disappeared. But then in later images, and he observed that it would reappear. So the information of that chip or that crystal was still present, but the material reality had dissolved. So if we are looking at treating this, we can try to treat it from a material perspective, but if you don't erase the program that's making this crystal reappear, then it will come back. It will regrow.
All right, I want to talk to you about the quantum physics realm in a moment. I just want to let the viewers know I'm actually going to link in the description below my interview with Dr. Nixon, the most recent one. And I'll also link in the description below the video that you sent me, Dr. Anna, where you can actually watch it constructing and deconstructing, because I think it's fascinating footage. Matt Taylor was also in that video, if I'm not mistaken. Now, all right, what is the quantum field? How is it? What is the current human interaction with this field? And, or, you know, talk to us about quantum physics in general, because I certainly need to learn a lot more about this subject myself.
Okay, imagine that. So we are in a material reality right now, but all things emerge from this what's called quantum field. Okay, so all large objects are constructed from little tiny subatomic particles. But in the quantum field, there exists something called quantum potentials, meaning the quantum field is really weird in that all time exists simultaneously. All possibilities, all ideas exist as potentials right now. And the way something is manifested into material reality is an observer collapses that reality. So the potential itself, let's say the idea to build a microchip, is a reality that exists. There's a type of physics that is called vacuum engineering that can create things from that quantum potential. Even if the material reality hasn't manifested yet, the program of the thing that is going to appear exists.
I understand this from a Christian perspective when God spoke the world into existence. The idea was there, the logos, the plan was there, and then it was spoken and it came out from the planned realm to the physical realm. That's the best comparison I can draw between what you're saying.
That's exactly right.
Right.
Exactly. Perfect.
Right. So then, Dr. Anna, correct me if I'm wrong, and Karen Kingston and I spoke about this again just this week. If these people are dabbling in that realm, then that's a and these people are evil. They're drawing evil plans from the quantum realm or the spiritual realm and manifesting it in the physical. But you're saying it can appear and disappear at will because it's being drawn from the quantum field. Am I getting this right?
Yes, and if we talk about the spiritual, so we come from the divine, and what is divine about human being is free will. Free will. They want to make us into automatons without free will, robots, right? So if we are the divine and we are of God, then to keep our free will is of absolute importance, and it is part of our soul and spiritual journey, right? So this is a spiritual war, it's a technological war, it's a biological war, and it's, a mind warfare scenario. But absolutely, there is an aspect of this, the idea of the evil of endeavoring to control humans. I think that's absolutely diabolical, absolutely evil, of the worst kind. Who would do something like that?
Well, you know what, the one, you're right in the sense that we have free will, and that free will allows us to even do the wrong thing if we want. I mean, we shouldn't, but we have the ability to. But this is
Yeah.
seeking to even override that free will that we have as sovereign and, as you say, divine beings made in the image of God. I think this is one of the most important interviews I've ever done, Dr. Anna, and I'm not even understating that because it's linking a lot of the missing links for me. And as I said, as a Christian, I understand that we're heading towards this mark of the beast. I want to ask you about this quantum dot technology. The US government is currently funding a quantum dot. It's meant to be a tattoo on the hand, a quantum tattoo. Do you know about this technology and what can you tell us about it?
So the idea to mark someone via frequency, it definitely can happen through this quantum dot, which is basically part of the social credit system, etc. What I'm concerned about is, remember the stories when the truckers, the US truckers, were coming towards Canada and they were part of that rally, and we heard reports where a trucker came to the border to show his vaccine passport, and the sergeant there, or the person at the border, was saying, "Oh, I knew miles away that you were coming, and that you're vexed." And so clearly, what is this ability that already has allowed to track people? With this vaccine passport, there were people who faked their vaccine passport, and if they didn't have that, maybe it was the luciferase, or maybe it was another information that they knew that this was fake.
Well, I was about to say the luciferase is listed in the Moderna patents. It is bioluminescent. The project that is being funded by the US government for the quantum dot technology is based on a luciferase, bioluminescent mark that will be able to show authorities whether you're vaxxed, what your health status is, all of this sort of stuff. But it's already been put into, at least we know, the Moderna shots. So likely it's in Pfizer as well. I mean, we don't know for sure, but it's highly likely.
So if you ask me what are these nanobots, right? What is their purpose? Clearly, we're seeing microchip assembly. Every electrical engineer that I've showed these images is saying these are microchips. So there are senders and receivers, and if they are senders, they are transmitting a gigahertz signal that even has been picked up through MAC addresses, but it is frequency specific to the DNA signature of the individual. Because the Pfizer vials themselves, they don't have MAC addresses. There's an interaction between the human DNA and the blood that actually, allows that identification, and the combination possibly also to the DNA. Your DNA is like a fingerprint.
This is interesting. So we're saying that when you've actually, I'm presuming you've tested, or people that you know have tested, to see whether the Pfizer vials have a MAC address. Have we actually tested when the Pfizer vials are put onto the little petri dish, or the little slide for the microscope? Has anyone tested to see whether once that chip is formed, it forms a MAC address?
I have not heard that it actually is forming a MAC address. I've only heard of the research that in human that there's an emission. Not in all humans, because I think there was a doctor who looked at this and only showed that about 70 or so percent of those people who were injected were actually emitting this. So there's a lot of questions here, and I think that what is important is that in the scientific inquiry, we have to ask all questions and allow all questions. We cannot have censorship because this is just too crazy. This is sci-fi. Well, it is happening. Just as Matt Taylor is saying, we are finding these things. We need the answers, and we need to have such an open mind. We cannot say everything is about the spike protein, or that there's just one way that this weapon has been deployed. We need to look at all possibilities, regardless of what they look like.
Wow, that's so powerful, Dr. Anna, and I agree with you. And, I think that there are a lot of doctors who've risen up in this time who think like a pharmaceutical doctor or a doctor that's in the mainstream, and are kind of potentially closed off to these things because they're too out there. But the very nature of medicine, I mean, the essence of science is to explore, eliminate possibilities. If we're so sure that this is just a wild theory, then let's eliminate it from the minds of all those people finding it with actual science after having robust debate, and we can move on from it. But until we've seen robust debate around this issue, I mean, there is just too much evidence around the world to deny that this is happening. And what you're explaining to us today is so profound. We will get into some of what you're finding about detoxing from this stuff, but I want to know, in terms of this being a technological weapon, apart from hacking the human brain, do we know what else it's able to do? I've heard of things like a kill switch. They can at any time make it so that that person collapses, for example. Could this be part of the reason why we're seeing, I don't know if you've seen the footage, but it's all over the world. People are kind of looking over their shoulder and then collapsing in this seizure, and then in some cases dying suddenly. Could this possibly be what this is?
I'm definitely concerned about it. We need to find it out. And the problem is this. So clearly what we've shown with all of these around the world, different teams who have looked at these vials, that this is a frequency responsive technology, meaning Andreas Kalker showed that if a magnetic field is being is getting close to this graphene, then all of a sudden there's a burst of light and this thing grows extremely rapidly. The same thing in regards to if it is close to a Wi-Fi router, the growth of these microchips is very much accelerated. If David Nixon, like he put a Faraday cage over it, then the chips do not assemble. So clearly, well, what is happening to people who are around the 5G towers, who are on their cell phones? I am personally extremely concerned about the fact that some people, for example, who are injected, are being recommended to get cardiac MRIs to evaluate them for myocarditis. Well, if you put these materials into such a strong field, this could be a huge problem. And I personally have had patients in my practice who, by other doctors, were put into an MRI scanner for brain fog after the jab, and they got so much worse. And so I think this is very important. I had suggested to look at other imaging, for example, infrared thermography, because of the concern of how these metals, as well as this technology, assembles under certain frequencies. I'm also concerned about UV light. Clearly, that has an impact. So there's a lot of healers who want to treat this with frequency modulation. And in general, I mean, I'm all about light medicine and frequency, but right now, until we figure out how this thing works, I would be overly cautious, and I would do everything possible to advocate against these 5G towers and them being put up everywhere.
Dr. Nixon said to me that we also need to eliminate 4G. So I'm presuming that you guys have conducted, your team has conducted these tests and found that it does react to 4G as well.
Absolutely. If you just keep it beside a router, which is 4G, it will grow very rapidly.
What about 3G?
I haven't looked at that specifically, but it is very evident that frequency, light, thermal energy, meaning heat, also makes it grow. The fact that these vials need to be kept at minus 80 degrees, and then Shimon Janovich, my colleague, showed that out of the liposomes, immediately after thawing, there is this growth of these structures at room temperature. Then he incubated them at body temperature, and these things just started growing all over the place. And he was able to document that over a period of 7 days. So it's very clear that thermal energy is also part of the growth, which is likely the fact that our body temperature is pretty high, that could be accelerating the growth as well. So we see these carbon structures, long tubular things in live blood analysis in injected people. We also see that it's shedding. We see uninjected people who also have this. We don't know whether or not it's just shedding or if it's also from chemtrail, from geoengineering, because this stuff is being sprayed on us as well. So there's so many unknowns that we are endeavoring to wrap our minds around. It's very, very challenging.
I so appreciate your honesty in all of this, Dr. Anna, and your acknowledgement of the fact that we are being attacked from every angle. I want to ask, is there a difference? Have we analyzed, say, rain droplets after a day of spraying and found that the structures are similar in what's happening in rain droplets as they are in the vials, for example?
Absolutely. So, in terms of rain drops, we clearly have found graphene-like ribbons. For example, after rain, some of my colleagues have found that it's in vaccinated and unvaccinated. Everybody had these ribbons, regardless. And then the unvaccinated are able to clear it. It appears faster. So, I also think that we need to consider that, graphene is being fed now to animals. It's in our food supply. The metals are in our food supply. Just think about baby food. And so it is everywhere. And so I think that the detoxification process and supporting the immune system as much as we can to be able to deal with these assaults is very, very important. And I do want to spend some time kind of talking about at least what we know.
Yes, please.
So the idea really is also that the more nutritionally optimized you are, and the healthier you eat with organic foods, clean water, don't drink city water. If you can, drink well water. Be very cautious about bottled water, because even like Pellegrino was found to have graphene after magnetic studies in there. So minimizing environmental exposure. It's very challenging to not breathe the air that has been sprayed with chemtrails and chemicals But at least awareness here is important. Then things like, making sure that your vitamin C intake is adequate. What a lot of people don't understand is that vitamin C is a chelator. It chelates metals. It binds to them. And so if you don't have access to EDTA chelation or other modalities, vitamin C is very good. And Linus Pauling talked about much higher recommendations than what is usually given in nutritional aspects, up to 10,000 milligrams per day in divided doses. So that's something that can be very helpful. Toxins, they cause mitochondrial dysfunction. What that means, they lower the electricity in the body. So vitamin C is an electron donor. It can mediate that. Things like vitamin D3, checking your blood level, making sure it's over 75 to be able to have a good immune response. Other nutrients, then NAC, which has been world famous, obviously, glutathione, those things. What a lot of people do not know is that our microbiome, the flora of the gut, is the primary defense mechanism for heavy metal toxins. And it also detoxifies graphene, but it requires nitric oxide. It's the enzymes in the gut that are detoxifying graphene are nitric oxide dependent. After the age of 40, most people, as well, especially if they have heavy metals, are deficient in nitric oxide. A lot of beet products do not increase the nitric oxide sufficiently. So people think they're taking a good product, but the nitric oxide remains low. So checking this, there are little test strips from human end, for example, where you can just check your saliva and make sure that your product is adequate is important. So this is one way of supporting your gut. Using things like sauna, like ionized foot baths to just detox yourself. EDTA chelation, I'm a certified chelation practitioner. EDTA binds to all toxic heavy metals and is able to chelate them out. This is an intravenous process. There is such a thing as liposomal EDTA. It doesn't work as good, but if that's all you have access to, I do recommend it. I have posted on my Substack information also about humic and fulvic acid, which is a product, a molecule that occurs when the forest decomposes, and it actually binds to heavy metals, and it's a very strong electron donor. So that's it's been shown to decompose humic graphene in studies. So those kinds of things are things that people can do to support themselves. Additionally to the type of vax injury protocols that are already out there that are very good. I'm just saying cover all of your bases, cover the spike protein, cover, use ivermectin, use hydroxychloroquine, use these other things, but also look at this other possibility of metal and graphene toxicants and add that to your protocol. So I think that if we cover all our bases, then we can help people more. And lastly, I really want to say, Maria, this is a fight for the survival of the human species. That is what is at stake. And what I want to say to every physician, stop caring about your reputation, what your peers say, what your paycheck does. If we do not save humanity and ensure its survival for future generation, we're in bad, bad shape. All of us have to fight. All of us have to come forward with our best scientific minds, collaborate, try to figure this out, and say, stop these shots. Clearly, the governments do not care. We have all the information and all of the adverse reaction you would need to stop, and they keep going. So we have to stand up and save humanity by finding this research.
Well, you're absolutely right, and you made a few key points there. Number one, the governments that have done this to us knew full well what they were doing. I don't buy, number one, that they didn't know about the adverse events. Just this week, our ATAGI, Australian Technical Advisory Group on Immunisation, they came out and said, oh, we only knew 5 months after the Pfizer injections that they were causing myocarditis. Number one, that's a lie because Pfizer and the FDA tried to cover this up for 75 years. Number two, you knew 5 months into the approvals that it was causing myocarditis. Why are we still recommending it for children? Why are we still recommending it at all? At all? If you knew 5 months in, that should have been the day that you stopped all mandates, stopped rollout. So number one, they knew about the health effects and hid it from us because this is a depopulation agenda. Number two, I don't buy that they didn't know about this technology. Every single government has agreed to hide the ingredients based on their contracts with Pfizer, which are all blacked out. Based on those contracts, hide the ingredients from the population. They're all colluding with the globalists who are a satanic cabal that are doing this to humanity, and they know full well. The only people that are coming to save us is us. There are no other people coming to save us. Until Jesus comes back, this is in the hands of humanity. And let me tell you that the expectation of God from the people is that we would help those who are suffering. That is what we need to be doing in this time, and that's what you're doing, Dr. Anna, and I'm grateful for you. So I want to say now, for all of the doctors out there with a conscience, if you're watching this and this is too out there for you, your paper, your degree is not worth the paper that it's written on because you're not willing to face the facts that people are finding this in human beings and this needs further study and we need to stop this immediately. The other thing that we need is we need people to rise up and try and stop this 5G rollout. And I mean, we're going to have to retrospectively try and fight 4G in this case until we know exactly what's going on with this nanotechnology and how we can stop it. Everything that you said today is so crucial. I want to direct people to your Substack. It's linked there on the description. It's on the screen right now for the viewers. Please go to Dr. Anna's Substack. It is Substack. I don't want to misspell this. Michaela?
No. Mihaicha.
I'm so sorry. mdphd.substack.com. It's on your screen right now. Go to her Substack and learn about everything that she's got amazing research on there. I mean, if I just scroll through some of these articles for you, I'll bring them up in a moment. But there's a lot more about this than just detoxing. But I think perhaps the most crucial thing that we have discussed today is this detox because people need to know how to get this stuff out of their system. Dr. Anna, I think it's worthy of you and I having another discussion again in future. The more that you find out, the more we can help humanity. Some final words for everyone before we wrap up today.
I think what is very important is humanity has tremendous resource. We are brilliant. And if we put our minds together and we unite in love and in the spirit of just moving forward into the future, this is our planet, our future. It doesn't belong to the satanic cabal. And that we do not allow ourselves to be hacked. No more shots. And we're going to find a solution for the 5.3 billion people who were coerced into getting this shot. And so I ask every scientist who has the knowledge about this machinery, this technology, who to join us and to help us understand it and find solution to save the human species from this. And thank you so much, Maria, for your passion and for bringing this forward.
No, it's my pleasure and my honor, Dr. Anna, that I get to be involved in some way in this fight. It truly is an honor. And can I just say, God bless you for what you're doing. May you have all of the resources that you need to get to the bottom of this and get the assistance that you need. And I hope that people support you, visit your Substack and offer you that assistance as well. We'll definitely speak to you again soon. God bless you. And thank you everyone for tuning in.
Thank you.